This year's All Iowa Reads book is My Name is Mary Sutter. It's the story of a young midwife who wants to become a doctor during the Civil War. And author Robin Olivera is coming to Iowa. I'll talk with her. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Then later in the hour, it's a story many Iowans are all too familiar with. On September 5th, 1982, 12-year-old Johnny Gosch was delivering newspapers in West Des Moines when he disappeared. He was never found. The new documentary, Who Took Johnny, chronicles Noreen Gosch's 30-year search for her missing son and for justice. I'll talk with Noreen Gosch and filmmaker Michael Galinsky. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Every year since 2003, the Iowa Center for the Book has selected a book for All Iowa Reads. The idea is to select an excellent book that's thought-provoking, can inspire in-depth discussion, and raises social issues relevant to Iowans. Iowans all over the state read the book and gather at libraries, coffee houses, auditoriums, and book clubs to talk it over. And this year's book is My Name is Mary Sutter by Robin Olivera. And as part of the All Iowa Reads program, she is coming to Iowa. She'll be appearing at 6 public libraries around the state, starting with the Des Moines Central Library on Monday, April 20th at 7 p.m. She's on the phone with me now. Hello, Robin.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I know it may be a little strange to be talking today about a book that you published 5 years ago, but let's talk a little bit about My Name is Mary Sutter. It's the story of a young midwife in the early 1860s. She has dreams of becoming a surgeon. And maybe you could read for us just a little bit from the very beginning of the book to introduce us to Mary.
I'd be happy to. Chapter 1. Are you Mary Sutter? Hours had passed since James Blevins had called for the midwife. All manner of shouts and tumult drifted in from the street, and so he had answered the door to his surgery rooms with some caution. But the young woman before him made an arresting sight. Taller and wider than was generally considered handsome, with an unflattering hat pinned to an unruly length of curls, though an enticing brightness about the eyes compensated. Mary Sutter, the midwife, he asked. Yes, I am Mary Sutter. The young woman looked from the address she had inscribed that afternoon in her small leather-brown notebook to the harried man in front of her, wondering how he could possibly know who she was. He was all angles, and his sharp chin gave the impression of discipline, though his uncombed hair and button vest were damp with sweat. Oh, thank God, he said, catching her by the elbow and pulling her inside and slamming the door shut on the cold April rain and the stray warble of a bugle in the distance. James Blevins knew Mary Sutter only by reputation. She is good, even better than her mother, people said. Now he formed an indelible impression of attractiveness, though there was nothing attractive about her. Her features were far too coarse, her hair far too wild and already beginning to silver. People said she was young, but you could not tell that by looking at her. She was an odd one, this Mary Sutter.
Robin Olivera reading from My Name is Mary Sutter. And Mary Sutter, as we just learned, she's a young midwife. She's in Albany, New York. She comes from a long line of midwives. And she has this dream of becoming a surgeon, but she can't go to medical school. And that's because of the time that she lived in.
Well, she couldn't go to the Albany Medical School. The Albany Medical School in New York did not admit women until 1912. There were a couple of other options for her. There was a medical school in Boston, but it was such a bad medical school that, in my opinion, Mary would have never deigned to have gone there to get a substandard education. There was a women's medical college in Philadelphia. However, at the opening of the Civil War, all the male faculty left and went to the war to work as surgeons for various regiments. So the other problem that she had is that she had family and she had a whole midwifery practice that would have made it difficult for her to leave Albany.
And this beginning of the book takes place at the very beginning of the Civil War. And the Civil War plays an incredibly important role in the novel. It gives Mary an opportunity, right?
It does give her an opportunity. And it gave, as war does generally, when the men are away, the women can then step into roles that the men have vacated. So Mary knew that Dorothea Dix was the head of the nurses for the army, wanted women to come and help in the hospitals in Washington. And so with the announcement of that position opening, Mary left Albany and went down to D.C.
Where did this character come from for you? Where did the idea of Mary Sutter originate?
This is going to sound a little crazy, but I was dusting my dining room one morning, and I had a vision of this young woman seated at a trestle table with science medical books behind her. She was wearing period dress, and she was looking through a brass microscope. Now, this was a very fleeting sort of a thing, but I then did research into women in science, and that's when I discovered that some women became physicians out of their experiences in the Civil War.
So there were real women who had experiences similar to Mary Sutter in the novel, but I've read that you, once you had that idea and the genesis of this book, you did not go on and research those women.
I did not want to follow a woman such as Mary Edwards Walker, who is famous for having become a surgeon during that war, because I wanted to imagine my way through the process. What happened after I finished the novel is that the way Mary Edwards Walker became a physician was very similar to my character, Mary Sutter's experiences, but it was all happenstance. Really, I read diaries of women who went to be nurses, but I never read anything about a woman who became a physician.
Really?
Yes.
And you did so much research. At least that's the impression that I get. I mean, the details, there are so many details, and they really seem to ring true. Was it almost difficult to research this period of time so in depth and avoid these women?
No, because very few records actually exist on their experience. That's one thing. But the other thing is that it was a choice I made to not pursue that because I wanted my imagination to run free, and I also wanted to not know the end, right? In order to make the story interesting to me and to keep me going through, rather than have a pattern to follow, I had to make my own pattern. It just fired up my imagination.
When did you figure out how it ended?
I went down various rabbit holes at the end. I probably ended it five different ways. What I knew at the beginning was that she wanted to be a physician. I did not know whether or not she would actually get there. So that I went all these different ways to see which is the one that felt the most right to me. And when I wrote when she actually does get to be a doctor, that was the one that felt the most true, considering all her experiences and what she went through.
How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, I tell people 10 years, but what happened was I have my first research card was from 2002 at the National Archives. So I started writing the book probably around 2000 or 2001. I wrote about halfway through and then realized I knew so little about the Civil War that I had to do a great deal of research. So I stopped writing for a little bit. I did some research. I went to the National Archives. I went to Gettysburg. I went to the hospital, the medical museum that the National Institutes run in Washington, D.C., so I wrote some more, and then I just needed help because the kind of book that I wanted to write was a very large saga, and I didn't quite have the skill set for it yet. So I stopped writing the book, and I went and got an MFA in writing at Vermont College of Fine Arts. When I finished that, I realized the book needed to be rewritten from the beginning, so I rewrote it from scratch three different times between 2006 and 2009. And that's when I finished the book.
Wow.
So approximately a decade.
Oh, my goodness. So this was a very long journey for you.
Yes, yes.
And reading, pardon me, and reading your bio, there are some unlikely things about you when we think about you as an author. I mean, your first degree was in Russian, and then you went on to become a nurse, and then later you got your MFA. What was writing something that always attracted you?
No, writing was not something that always attracted me, but what attracted me was books. Of all the things you say, I'm a reader first. My youth was spent hiding in libraries, reading books. I just read everything I could possibly read all the way through my 20s and 30s, say running through, you know, English literature and running through Russian literature and educating myself. And when my son was born, I decided that I could either go back to nursing, which was a profession I loved, by the way, or I could try to make one of those things that I loved. Now, I will say I took some short story writing classes in college, but I won't say that I excelled at them at all. So it was really in pursuit of trying to make a book that I would want to read that prompted me to start writing.
And thinking about doing that when you had a child, I mean, that's not, I understand that you left your job, but that doesn't mean you had a lot of free time. How did you balance that?
Well, I wrote when the kids were in school. So I have a daughter and a son. My son was the last one to go to school. So off he went to kindergarten. And right away I started when he was gone to write. Now, that meant that I didn't work as much in the PTA and I didn't work as much in the classroom, but I was completely determined. The interesting thing is that I tried really hard not to let my writing impact their lives because I didn't know whether or not the book would be good. I didn't know whether or not I would be able to make the kind of book that I wanted to have published. So I didn't want to take time away from raising them in order to go toward a dream, a very uncertain dream, I have to say. So that when my daughter, and when the book was published, my daughter and son, they had never read it. They knew very little about it, actually.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Robin Olivera. She is the author of My Name is Mary Sutter, which is the novel selected for All Iowa Reads for 2015. Every year since 2003, the Iowa Center for the Book has picked a book for everyone in Iowa to read. And Robin Olivera will be coming to Iowa. She'll be at the Des Moines Public Library as part of the AVID series on April 20th at 7 p.m., and she'll be visiting five other public libraries around the state following that. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm talking with Robin Olivera. Her first novel, My Name is Mary Sutter, was published in 2010. This year, it is the selection from the Iowa Center for the Book for All Iowa Reads. And she's going to be making a tour through Iowa, starting with the Des Moines Public Library, part of their AVID series on April 20th at 7 p.m. She'll also be at the North Liberty Public Library on the 21st, Maquoketa on the 22nd, Moline on the 23rd, Bettendorf on the 23rd as well. It's a busy day. And the Charles City Public Library on April 24th. And we're talking about the novel, My Name is Mary Sutter, and her journey to that novel, a decade-long journey writing this novel. And we talked earlier, you were a nurse for the largest part of your career, Robin. And in the book, of course, Mary Sutter is a midwife. She is on this journey to become a surgeon. And we see many scenes of her in different medical environments during the Civil War. How much research did you do about medicine in the Civil War to prepare you to write the book?
I did an enormous amount of research. There's a wonderful publication called The Medical and Surgical History of the War of the Rebellion. It was published in 1888, and it contains every case history of every soldier that they were able to contact and follow after the war. So it was a wealth of information for me. I, having a background as a nurse, I could, and an intensive care nurse, so I was able to read those case histories, the surgical histories, medical director's notes, and see where they were going wrong. And that helped me to construct scenes that would expose the devastation of their medical ignorance, you know, for the most part, really, and how that affected the soldiers.
Give us an idea. I mean, as a reader, it becomes very clear how little doctors knew at that point in time in the 1860s. But can you give us an idea of the enormous disadvantage that they were working at?
Well, they didn't understand germ theory. That would not be revealed widely until the end of the war, until about 1867 or 1868, when Lister published in the Lancet, the British publication. Now, before that, there were several places around the world where people were beginning to come to that conclusion, but they were ignored and in some cases considered insane. So that without that knowledge of germ theory, they didn't understand the whole public health implications of having lots of men who were living on farms and outside of the city come together, bringing with them their mumps and their measles, and et cetera. They didn't understand the public health implications of poor sanitation. And they didn't understand sterilization of instruments, so that they would reuse the same instruments over and over again. They would reuse the same sponges, the same water. So basically what they were doing was infecting soldier after soldier after soldier. And in the public health situation in the camps, they were all infecting one another. It was a complete disaster.
Now, I think I've read the main cause of death of soldiers in the Civil War was actually sickness rather than being wounded. Am I right about that?
You're correct. Two-thirds of the soldiers in the Civil War died from medical problems and not from their injuries.
Wow. So this was just a rampant problem. Dysentery was a rampant problem among the soldiers as well, right?
Dysentery was the leading cause of death for soldiers in the Civil War. And that was directly as a result of poor sanitation.
Wow. So as a nurse and someone with your medical background, reading all of this and then trying to recreate it for the book, was it difficult to put yourself in the role of having so little knowledge?
Well, see, part of me really wanted Mary Sutter and William Stipp to have preternatural knowledge of medicine, and to be able to go in and be the heroine and tell everybody what was going wrong and why they were so wrong and save people. But of course, I couldn't do that. It wouldn't be realistic. And so it was really difficult for me to write those scenes where somebody who was very dedicated and really bright would just make these terrible mistakes. I had to hold myself back. It's awful.
Well, and speaking of those characters, would you read a little bit from the book for us? This is a section, and you can set it up for us better than I can, but Mary Sutter is assisting in amputations, and they are just working against this huge wall of ignorance of how the body works and even anatomy, right? And under these horrible circumstances, set up the scene for us a little bit.
All right. This scene is from page 153 in the book, and Mary Sutter and William Stipp have just begun to do amputations. Now, I just want to say that amputations in the Civil War have been much maligned, but they saved more lives than they killed. It was actually the best thing that you could do for a soldier who came in with a bullet wound to the limb. But they don't really know what they're doing, because these were the kinds of wounds that people hadn't seen yet, because mini balls had just been invented and they were shattering these limbs. So amputations were very rare at the outset. And all they had was this French surgical kit, the French surgical text that they had imported. And Mary and William have just done three amputations in the terribly poorly equipped Union Hotel Hospital in Georgetown. And they're finished, and they've gone outside. And Mary says to him, "What do we do about the legs? The hallway walls were cool. Later in the day, the heat would render the lathe and plaster unbearable. Stipp looked down at his own legs. What delicate, sturdy things they were, he thought, wholly irreplaceable. He wondered what it would be like to awake and find them gone. I thought to carry them out, Mary continued, her voice wavering, but I didn't know where to take them. The trash heap seems wrong. I don't want anyone else to see them or to find them. And if by chance someone did stumble on the legs, at least that unlucky soul would be able to shut his eyes, she thought. At least he would have that, while over and over she was hearing the saw doing its work, scraping and grating. She thought of Thomas and Christian. Where were they? Was someone thinking of the best way to dispose of their limbs? She was proud of how she had acted during the surgeries. But if it had been Thomas or her brother on the table, could she have been so detached? Who were those boys? I don't even know their names. I don't even know where they came from. How will I tell their mothers? What will we do with the legs? I haven't any idea, Stipp said. Do we bury them? I don't know. Who should I tell to come get them? I don't know, damn it. Stipp slammed his hand against the wall. He had not wanted Mary by his side, and then he couldn't have asked for anyone better. She had stayed calm. The only requisite that really mattered, but she had given more intelligence and charity. When that boy had died, flailing, disoriented, shouting, reliving the battle, the blood arcing everywhere, Mary had thought to kneel by the boy's side and to sing. To sing! The boy had died to the unsteady voice of a tone-deaf, blood-covered angel. And the next one? Stipp couldn't even think of how long that boy had been dead. A colossal error on his part. What was basic? Breathing. The boy had done none of that for who knew how long. 8 hours together in a room, and he and Mary had accomplished 2 terrible mistakes and only 1 good outcome. The army had thought of nothing. They needed coffins, a dead house, a way to let headquarters know who had died and who had not died. But none of this was in place. How do you forget coffins? How do you forget to supply tourniquets? How do you forget that people might die? I'll tell you again. Go home, Mary Sutter. You don't need to be here. You don't need to witness any of this.
Robin Olivera reading from her novel, My Name is Mary Sutter, the selection for All Iowa Reads this year. And Robin, there were some amazing advances made in medicine because of the Civil War. These characters were doing things that the doctors and the nurses in real life in the Civil War were doing things that no one had done on a large scale before, right?
That is correct. Orthopedic surgery took a huge advance forward during this time period. They were able to fashion new limbs for people. They did sometimes remarkable surgeries on faces where people had parts of their jaws torn away, and they've been able to reconstruct them or at least give them a way to keep living. It was really, you know, as the war does, the Korean War advanced medicine for many people. The Crimean War advanced medicine. It has been a signature of war that physicians are able to make discoveries that benefit everyone.
In the book, Mary Sutter wants to become a doctor. She is a gifted midwife and seems to have an amazing understanding of how the body works, how labor works, that many people at that time wouldn't have had, and doctors at that time probably didn't have. One of her heroes is Florence Nightingale, of course, a nurse. And, you know, this was a time when women didn't have careers. They got married for the most part and, you know, took care of their children. Did you give a lot of thought to her desire to become a doctor? Why was that so important when she did have this career and this purpose in life?
Well, she says it at one point to James Blevins, another physician, the physician I spoke of early on in the book. The reason was because she wanted more knowledge. And if you think about the girls in Nigeria with the Boko Haram and in Pakistan, girls who want more knowledge in societies where they are not allowed to pursue that still remain the kind of bright, intelligent, curious people who will try as hard as they can to get what they need. And so I just fashioned her as that, just a really bright, stubborn individual who was going to go ahead and try to usurp the system in some way, I have to say.
At this time in our history, and for so much of our history before and after this period, women were really marginalized in our culture. And you write about these very strong women with, you know, so much depth to their character. You also, in your second novel, you also write about a similar time period in the 1880s, another very strong woman at the head of that novel. Is there something about women at this time in our history that really appeals to you, that you want to explore?
I do find myself attracted to women who break that 19th century glass ceiling. I have to say, I don't know why, except that I think that around the world, women are still fighting for rights. And even in our culture, women are paid less and women don't advance as quickly, given the exact same qualifications and the exact same job performance. And in other areas of the world, women's situation is much worse. So I guess I have to say I'm trying to champion women everywhere and showcase women who have gone ahead and pursued in spite of everything.
Mary Sutter has a twin sister, and as you read early in our conversation, there is a contrast between the sisters. Mary Sutter, people are often impressed by her confidence, by her intelligence, by her, you know, so many wonderful qualities about her, but constantly you reinforce the idea that she's not classically pretty or beautiful. She has a twin sister who is classically pretty and who makes much more conventional choices. Given your sympathy for Mary Sutter and women who are breaking that glass ceiling, did you have a hard time writing her sister in a sympathetic way? Because she does come off as likable and sympathetic, but certainly she's not Mary Sutter.
Well, I made her that way for several reasons. One, on the way that a novel works, opposites are best in order to form conflict. So that's one choice that a writer will make. But, you know, when I was writing her, I really wanted to find something sympathetic about her character because she was leading the life that most of the women led. And if she's not ambitious, does that mean that she's any less than her sister? And I have to say that, of course, she isn't, right? I mean, I think that people's choices should be not based on gender. And so for her, she wanted to marry. She wanted to have children. She wanted to be in love. She didn't want to deliver babies, all of which I thought were valid choices that someone should make. And her mother, you know, her mother made no judgments between, Amelia made no judgments between Jenny and Mary. They were to her equal. She loved them both. She didn't expect her daughters to follow her. She just hoped that one of them would. And so I do have some ambition myself, and so it was harder for me to think about it was hard for me to think that you would never want anything beyond all of that. But I did understand that this was just a choice, and this was who she was, and I didn't want to judge her for it.
Now, I know that novelists run into this all the time. When we read novels, we think that the novelist has written themselves into the book. Is Mary Sutter a little bit of an alter ego for you?
Well, first of all, I would never want to be a physician. I'd make a terrible physician. I can tell you that right now. I am much better suited as a nurse. I never myself have ever wanted to be a physician. But on the other hand, when I began writing, I did want to publish a book. So there was a great deal of determination on that side. I once had a friend who told me, he said, you're exactly like Mary Sutter. but I have to tell you, you know, she comes up with much snappier comebacks than I do within the time period, you know. So there are lots of things about Mary Sutter that I wish I could be.
I'm sure in some ways, having this book picked by All Iowa Reads and then now sort of revisiting your book tour, which took place 5 years ago, must be a little bit strange. Is it? Has this book changed for you at all in the 5 years since you've published it?
I recently reread it after I knew I would be going out again with the book, and I like the book. What they say is that writers never finish books, they abandon them. So on one level, I'm doing some line edits in my head. You know, I want to change a word, or I want to change a sentence, or I think something could be said better. So on that sense, I'm still not completely done with the book. But on the other hand, I still like the book a lot, and I think I'm a little surprised about that. You know, sometimes I turn the pages and I think, what's going to happen next? And I wrote what's going to happen next. And I'm still thinking, well, what's she going to do next? So it's kind of a nice surprise to let it lie for several years and then revisit it.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you. It was really enjoyable.
Robin Oliveira is the author of My Name is Mary Sutter, which is the All Iowa Reads selection from the Iowa Center for the Book for 2015. And as part of All Iowa Reads, she'll be coming to Iowa. She's appearing at 6 public libraries around the state, starting with the Des Moines Central Library on Monday, April 20th at 7 p.m. And she'll also be in North Liberty, Maquoketa, Moline, Bettendorf, and Charles City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.